Great to be here. Welcome. I missed you all last week. We did the very Australian long weekend thing and had a weekend off. So it was fantastic. But pleased to be back with my family now. Awesome. Have you who's ever had the privilege of having a work vehicle? Yeah. Have you noticed some things about work vehicles? Yeah, they do nearly everything better, don't they? They go faster, they stop faster, they jump curbs better, they don't need washing, they don't need filling up with petrol, they don't need registering, they don't need insuring, and you don't stress about them. They are wonderful things. But basically because somebody else pays. And the beauty of a work car is, yeah, you're not paying all those expenses. You're not worrying about it. I remember when I bought one new car in my life. Bought Alex, my wife, and Alex is at the Valley this morning, so she misses you all and sends her love to everybody. She's worship leading at our Derwent Valley service in Norfolk. But bought her a brand new VW Golf. I remember it was a beautiful dark blue colour. And two things happened to it almost within the first week. She goes somewhere, takes a sister with her. A sister opens the door, bang, straight into a parking meter, and you know, puts a dent in a brand new door. And you know, I'm thinking, brand new car, we're going to keep it new. You know, and Alex had promised me that she was going to keep washing it forever. And that happened. Anyway, a couple of days later, we went to a picnic in a park up at Waterworks. And Alex, not understanding actually how low to the ground her VW Golf was, she goes boring straight over a speed hump. And I was already there, and I saw her arriving with sort of oil just sort of streaming out from under the car. Basically, yeah, she hit the sump under the engine and split it open, and of course all the oil poured out. And you know, as that car went on, you know, I don't mind washing cars, but I find it a depressing activity. Because every time you wash a car, you find another dent, another scratch, or another thing. And after a while, if you're a person that doesn't like confronting things like that, you think, what's just easier not to wash the car? But work cars, wow, you don't worry about that dent, that scratch, those things. That's not a big deal because somebody else owns it. Someone else pays. And the driver enjoys the benefits without the responsibility. But the downside is you might not always have access to that vehicle. The company might go through a restructure. They might change the way they have resources divvied out in that company. You may not be as important as that in that company as you were previously. All sorts of things change. If you've ever gone from renting a home or a house to actually buying that home, you will know that you feel very different about it, don't you? You take responsibility for it. You start to get a vision for what it could be, and you start to invest into the future of that property. You actually go from occupancy to ownership. You actually go from just having presence to having possession of that property, from presence to possession. Now, this is interesting. When Israel had been occupying their promised land, and if you can imagine this, they have been looking forward to this promised land for a long time. There have been generations that were talking about while they were slaves in Egypt, someday, you know, we'll have our own land, we'll have our own place. We will be able to determine our own destiny. And when they were slaves, they couldn't even imagine that, other than this little glimmer that one day it's going to happen. One day we won't be making bricks all day. One day we won't be at the mercy of somebody else who tells us what to do, when we can get up, when we can go to bed, how long we've got to work, how hard we've got to work, how much they abuse us. All those things were outside of their control. And they'd been looking forward to that. And you know the story. They on their first start, they missed it. God said, here it is. Step in, take possession, go and get it. I've given it to you. All you've got to do is walk in there and take ownership of what I've given you. And they missed that opportunity. And as you know, they had to go through a generational change before they were ready to go in. A whole generation couldn't transition from being slaves to being owners who could determine their own destiny. They could not do that. It was so intrinsically entrenched in them that they struggled to do that. And God brought them to the very precipice of the promised land and said, here it is, let's go. And they struggled to do that. They couldn't. And basically, a whole generation had to pass away before they could actually go into the promised land, because there was a spirit that they were carrying that God said, you know what, you're not going to take that spirit into the promised land. And anyway, they go in, as you know, and Joshua was this amazing general that led them through that. And in Joshua 13, it says, now, Joshua was old and advanced in years. And the Lord said to him, isn't the Bible's got this amazing stuff that sort of just states the obvious? And you think, yeah. And the Lord said to him, you are old and advanced in years. Has anybody wanted a word from God? Like, you know, a prophecy this morning. You are old and advanced in years. Anybody would like that prophecy? And there remains very much land to be possessed. So even while acknowledging Joshua's advanced years, God still tells him there is a job that needs to be done. So he's old, he's done incredible things. He is one of the big heroes of the whole Israelite journey. He is right up there of people that have done incredible things for God, and an amazing leader and an amazing general. And now he's old, where most generals are enjoying their retirement. Most generals are enjoying the country club experience. And God says to him, hey, you are old. And he says, yeah, I feel old. Of course I'm old. But he says, I am not finished with you yet. And there is something in that, no matter where you've been on your Christian walk, no matter where you've been in the kingdom, no matter how long you've been doing it, no matter how young or old you feel, there is more. There is always more. God has not finished with anybody yet. And he says that to Joshua. And it had been one thing for Joshua's army to come through that region and destroy military opposition. And once they got going, once they got on a roll, once they got momentum, they did that really, really well. But the issue was, as we've found out in recent history, it's actually one thing to go into a region and get military supremacy, but it's actually another thing to go from being an occupying force to actually determining the future of that region. So what would happen is they would go through and they would take military victory, but they didn't actually take possession of the land. They didn't start to inhabit those cities in such a way that they brought their culture and their direction and their purpose to them. And what would happen is the remnants of the people that were there would sort of creep back in. They would take up residence again. They would bring their culture, their ideas, their thinking, their gods, all that stuff would actually start to determine the future of those cities rather than what God had called them to do. And God's saying, let's not settle for a partial inheritance. Let's not settle for a partial inheritance. So many of you have got callings, you've heard prophecies, and it's like, yeah, I've started. But God is saying, let's not settle for a partial inheritance. Let's not settle for just a little bit. God wants us to keep pressing on. He wants us to step into. He wants to take you into the new. And it's easy to settle for a partial victory in something. Recently, I've had when I was a kid, I had a bit of eczema and stuff like that. I'm one of those people that get sort of allergies to things. And anyway, recently it was a washing powder issue that started, and we found out that they'd changed the recipe of washing powder. And anyway, my skin started breaking, and it takes you a while to work out what's going on. And anyway, it was driving me mad, and Alex is wondering why I'm always sort of finding implements to scratch my back and all these things that were going on. And I just thought, oh, well, I'll work it out. You know, we'll change shampoos, soaps, washing powders, whatever. And it just wouldn't go away. And instead of just going straight to the doctor, like we do, I started controlling it. I went to the chemist and I got some cream, like a steroid cream, and I got some sort of low-level antihistamines, and I had it sort of nearly under control. I thought, yeah, I've got this. You know, we've got this. We're gonna move through it. Anyway, and then last weekend it just flared up again, worse than ever. Like, it was driving me mad, and you know, I've got things coming out everywhere, and we were away, and I ran out of the cream that you had to put on it, and you know, my life is just a misery. Yeah, problems that we have in the first world. Yeah. So then, I get back and I get some more cream, and it's still not getting any better. And Alex says, Dave, you need to go to the doctor, as wives do. And she went one step further. She rang straight away and made me an appointment. And I went down there, and you know, he sort of pretty much agreed with my diagnosis, and he said, oh, yeah, this is happening. But what he did is he prescribed me some much stronger steroid cream, and he said, you know, take these antihistamines and get into that. And, you know, within about 2 days, you know, the whole thing has settled down, and it's just about gone. But the problem is, so often we get an inkling and we think we've got the partial victory, and we think, I can control this. I can manage this. I can do. I'm starting to get a little bit of victory over my problem with alcohol, and we think we've got it contained and we've got it there. But God says, "I don't want you to have a partial victory in that. I want you to have total victory." And so often we don't go to the doctor. In other words, we don't go to God and say, "Look, I want you to give me complete victory over this. I want the full inheritance. I want to step right into what you've got for me." So are we looking for the part, you know, just about dealing with that financial situation, or almost taking ownership over your inclination to gossip and get involved in destructive conversations and negative talk? Jesus actually wants to lead you not into partial victory, but victory. And I've said this time and time again, but our mindset is that he wants us to fight our battles not for victory, because we've already got that. He's given us victory, but we are to fight them from victory. If you see a sports team that are in the habit of winning, often they will win games and matches that look like they're gone from all money, because why is it? They're in the habit of winning, they know how to win, and they believe that they can win from almost any point. And you know what? Because we've already got victory, it doesn't matter what's going on in your life. Jesus says, you know what? We've got this, and we're going to take this on, not to get you through to victory, but from a place of victory, and you're going to get through. We're going to do this together. We're called to own or possess what we've been given, rather than just merely occupy a space. And whether that be literally or metaphorically, occupancy may demand some responsibility. If you've rented a house, you know, there's all sorts of responsibilities you have to the landlord. In some ways, it can feel more onerous even than ownership. You know, you've got to keep it clean, you've got to do this, and you've got house inspections and all of these things that go on when you're a tenant. But you know what? With ownership comes the capacity to determine destiny and influence future. With ownership comes the capacity to determine destiny and influence future. Do we want to own or occupy? Why not? You're going to be here for a while, most of you. There's some nervous laughs going on here. we're going to be here for a while. Let's not just occupy space. Let's own it. Because you know what? You have been given ownership in the kingdom. Own the space. Own your future. Have a kingdom influence on your destiny and the destiny of others that are around you. So, all right, how do we move from occupancy to ownership? How do we move from just sort of taking up space to making a difference? I think number one, you've got to live. You've got to live with the authority that you have already been given. And often we don't move into ownership because we don't really believe that we have the authority. And in the kingdom, we are given authority. When God created humanity, he gave us dominion and authority. Listen to what it says in Genesis chapter 1, right at the beginning. So God's created humanity, and it says, then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. I'm reading from the New King James Version, so it's sort of old school terms. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. The issue was, as a result of the fall, we, humanity, the big royal we, handed over dominion and authority to our enemy. We basically said, okay, you know, God put us on the earth. He said, look, I want you here. Number one, I want you to look after this place. And I don't want you just to be caretakers, but I actually want you to determine future and destiny of what I have given you. I have given you the authority and the capacity and the intellect and everything that you need to determine the future and the destiny of this planet. And you look around now and think, wow, what have we been doing? Well, the problem was we actually abdicated that responsibility, that authority, and we handed it over to somebody else. We handed that over to the devil and said, okay, it's too much responsibility for us. You go for your life, mate. But when Jesus died, his death on the cross righteously restored all that humanity had lost. That is why when he went back to heaven, he was able to say this. When he's giving the Great Commission, he says, all authority. Some of it, bit of it. No, he says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples. Now, there's a big difference between him looking at his disciples and saying, hey guys, we've got a bit of a mission here. Just go and make disciples. And they think, oh, how are we going to do that? Who are we? You know, somebody have asked you to go and do something and you're thinking, gee, that's going to go well, isn't it? Go and tell that child to settle down. Child, settle down. Yeah, good. And there's this sense where Jesus actually went way, way beyond that. He actually said, look, if I'm going to ask you to do something, I'm going to give you everything that you need to do it. He says, go and make disciples. But before he did that, he says, all authority. All, every bit, every authority that I have got from my Father that has been given to me, I'm giving to you. Therefore, go and make disciples. In other words, you have got the authority. You have got the power. You've got the capacity. In other words, when you speak into that, there is actually more than just your words. You've got the might of heaven actually coming through your voice when you speak in submission to God and the Holy Spirit, and His authority works through us. The same authority that Jesus had over the storm, evil spirits, sickness, diseases, and even death is ours. Right now, He's given that to us. God doesn't ask us to do something without giving us authority. When Jesus sent His disciples out, Luke 10:19, He says, look, I have given you authority over all the power of the enemy. You can now walk among snakes and scorpions and crush them, nothing will injure you. Now, I don't know, Sometimes we read things like that. We think, wouldn't it be good just to, I'm going to test this out. I want to go and jump in a pit of snakes and scorpions and just see how well that works. Well, maybe it might be a great faith step for you. But basically what he was saying was, you know what? You get out there among stuff with the authority that I have given you, doing what I've called to do, and I will protect you. You are safe. Nothing will touch you. How can we move from occupancy to ownership? I think the second thing is to live under authority. That's the biggie. I think we're really bigots. I'd like authority. But we've actually got to choose to live under authority. And listen to what James says in James 4, verse 7. He says, submit yourselves then to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. You see, submit yourself to God, resist the devil, and he will flee. The power of the authority over the enemy is in our submission. The power that we have over things that are coming against us, over a devil, over temptation, over those things, is actually in our willingness to submit ourselves to God. And who likes hearing words like submission, obedience, and authority? Perhaps we struggle with them a bit because those words, submission, obedience, and authority, have often been abused by people in positions of power. But also there's something in all of us that doesn't particularly want to be under authority. It goes against our nature to follow someone or serve someone. I certainly, for years, struggled with authority and authority figures. I had a lot of trouble at school, and a lot of that was I just rebelled against authority. It was just something in me. Even when I was trying not to, it was just oozing out of me. Youth leaders, police officers. I had a lot of trouble with police officers when I got my car. You know, I had this stuff with authority that just seemed to find me. So it's natural. Of course, if I've felt it, it must be. But choosing to be under authority is the way the kingdom advances. One of the most interesting miracles that you'll read in the New Testament is there's a Roman centurion. And this was the first miracle that basically Jesus sort of administered on somebody who wasn't a Jew, outside of his own people. So that's obviously significant. And this Roman centurion comes to Jesus and he tracks him down in the middle of the mayhem and the crowd and all that was going on, and he says, "Hey, I'm pretty concerned. I've got this guy that works for me. He's really important to me. And he's going to die." And Jesus sort of, "Well, what do you want me to do?" And he says, "Well, what I would like you to do, Jesus, is I would just like you to speak the word and he'll be healed." And Jesus sort of quizzed him a bit. He says, "Well, wow." He says, I haven't seen any faith like this among my own people. They just want me to come. They want me to be there." He said, "This is incredible faith." And the centurion sort of unpacks it for everybody that's around. He said, "Well," he says, "I get it." He says, "I'm a military man. I'm under authority." He says, "When I get my orders, I do them. I get that. I understand it. I've got a lot of guys under me. I say, go here or do this or take those troops over there, and they do it. I understand that you've got authority. And you have got the power to administer that authority. All you've got to do is speak it out, and he's going to be healed." And it was actually his understanding of being under authority, of submitting to the authority, that saw this amazing miracle happen. And I've heard it said that sometimes in our Western world, we say, "Hey, why don't we see some of the miracles go on in other parts. You know, you hear this and that, you know, stuff going on in Africa and other parts of the world. Now, I heard it said some time back that the places that we see more miracles than anywhere is in the developing world, is in prisons, and in the military. Why is that? Because intrinsically people get authority. I mean, in prison, people don't like it, but they understand it. And often we, and this is not sort of having, this is just understanding that when you've got a good father who wants good things for you, says, hey, I want you to submit to my authority, there is an incredible power that comes to us. You know, we are not able to have authority without being under authority. Jesus was an incredible example of that. You know, he said in John 5:19, he said, you know what, I don't do anything that I don't see my Father doing. In other words, everything I'm doing, I'm God, but in this, I'm also 100% human, and I've chosen to place myself under the authority of the Father, and that is where my power is. So often we get out there and we find ourselves in all sorts of weird and wonderful situations. Oh, how did my life get so messy? How did it get so complicated? How did this go on? How did I ever get in this relationship? How did that go on? How did I get here? Oh, gee, I have found ways to complicate my life that I can't even read about on Facebook. And, you know, it's like, oh. Jesus lived a very complicated, complex life. Had all these different pressures. He's managing a religious system. He's trying to work with that and bring new wine into an old wineskin that didn't have the capacity to change. He's trying to change and completely rebuild something and bring, you know, the love of God and the capacity for humanity to change and live out what God had called them to live. And he's got an occupying force that's actually in that land that's colouring their thinking on nearly everything. So whenever he says that, people are hearing it in political terms. They've got all this stuff going on. His world was complicated. But he brought it back to the fact that I am under authority. Well, why did I come into this world? Well, I came into this world to carry the weight and the burden of humanity's sin, of all the stuff that we've done. I came to challenge those things, and regardless of what happens, I will remain under that authority. I will not get sidetracked, and I will do what I'm called to do. And he found a way of simplifying his life in the middle of the complexities. Was he a simple person? No. Did he try and scout around the complexities? No, he addressed heaps of them. But the power was the fact that he remained under authority no matter what was happening around him. I like what you said this morning, Em. You know, like that our journey sometimes has all sorts of stuff going on, but that doesn't change the calling on our life. How do we, number three, how do we move from occupancy to ownership? I think we've got to take responsibility for ourselves first. If you read on in Joshua, where I was talking there before, it says each tribe was responsible to possess their own land. There's a whole list of the different land that was given for various tribes and what they were supposed to do. So God broke it down. He said, you know, it's like, oh, just go and possess the land. It's like, oh yeah, that's out there, isn't it? But well, he says, the tribe of Benjamin, the tribe of Judah, you know, you go and take these areas and you take responsibility for them. In other words, you know, Benjamin is not worrying too much about what Judah's got to take responsibility for, because that was who called them to do. Often we've got all this stuff going on and we don't take responsibility for ourselves first. God is high on the concept of personal responsibility and initiative. responsibility and empowerment. He doesn't want you to be living like a person waiting for somebody to tell you everything and, I'm too scared to go here. You see, the sort of authority God's talking about, you see, actually, authority brings freedom. Authority brings the capacity to change. Authority brings it gives you what you need to move from where you are onto what you're called to do. And sometimes we resist that. We say, authority's going to squash me. No, that is an abuse of power. Authority, true authority, lifts up and it empowers and it sets people free. And that's the sort of authority that our Father wants us to know and experience. And He wants us to take personal responsibility to put ourselves in that sort of position. We are blessed by personally taking responsibility and initiative in trusting God and what He's called us to do. It's easy to live with a blame or point the finger or live with 1,000 excuses. I think our society is really good at being outraged about stuff in recent times, isn't it? In fact, we've got all these people living around that are just totally outraged all the time. And they're just really looking for another thing to be outraged about. And when we look at what goes on in the world, there's all the keyboard warriors and, you know, everybody's got their opinion. They should. Or I'm outraged about this, or that person should. But, you know, change doesn't just happen by us projecting. Change actually happens when we take personal responsibility. Doesn't mean... I'm not saying that you don't have a voice about injustice. I'm not saying that you don't have a voice, you know, about institutional abuse. I'm not saying that you don't address those things, but I'm saying we've actually got to start by understanding that we take responsibility for our stuff first. And that's a kingdom principle, but in the world that we live in, it's actually not something that we're actually moving further and further away from that. You know, we're abdicating personal responsibility and just thinking that somebody else should come and fix the stuff. About 5 years ago, I was at a meeting with one of our government ministers. And they were talking about... It was the time when Tasmania was completely broke. Tasmania had run right out of money. And they were sort of talking about some of the ongoing issues and things that were there, sort of, you know, in and around, you know, social issues and health and things like that. And she said, look, you know, even if we had all the money in the world, we can't actually fix this stuff. It's not fixed by money, you know, things like generational poverty and things like that. And then they showed us, you know, some case studies that had been done on different people that had been in contact with different government services. And the figures would just blow your mind. You know, just classic stuff that you could understand, like a teenage mum has a child and that child goes through life, becomes a teenage mum herself, and then they'd map all this contact with different government services and things like that. And we're not just talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, we're talking millions of dollars of that had been expended, you know, to try and deal with this. And everybody knows that that's not fixing it. And what I'm saying here is not pointing the finger at individuals in those things. I'm talking about an attitude of understanding that we've got to take personal responsibility because somebody else isn't going to come and fix our stuff. Well, actually, I'm a little bit wrong. Because when we take personal responsibility and we ask Jesus to come and fix our stuff, he says, yeah, I'll walk with you. I will help you. I will do that. A couple of years ago, we sold our little cottage that we've been in for 20-odd years in Lenner Valley. And we loved that little cottage, and we were happy. That's why we'd stayed there so long, amongst other things. But it's interesting that that little cottage sold for roughly 5 times what we paid for it. And that's, Jeff will tell you, that's about, it's about what happens over that time in the real estate market. That's about how it goes. We were in an area that was selling very well at the time, so we did realize a good price for it. And then the reason that we sold that little house is that we needed more space, and we needed a house that better suited our requirements in the current season. But it was actually, it was the decision that we'd made, and we, you know, we haven't been gurus with all this stuff at all. Could have done a whole lot better. But it was a decision that we made way back then, as you know, fairly young couple, you know, being, you know, renting a house and being in that, to deciding we're going to buy a place. And as is the case with most people, it was a stretch at the time. You know, you feel like you get financed by the skin of your teeth, and you you feel like, oh gee, this will be a stretch, and you know, you get into it, and it worked and all that. But it was the decision that we made, you know, back 20-odd years ago, that actually empowered us to make decisions that take us into the next season. Why was that? It was because, you know, there was a sense of choosing at that moment to step from being just occupiers into being owners. And if we can step from being occupiers into being owners, you know, we can see the kingdom advance in incredible ways. You can actually be part of something amazing. And I'm not here saying you all need to go and buy houses. Well, you know, that's not a bad thing, but I'm not saying that. I'm talking much more metaphorically, that we just choose to be in ownership rather than occupying. Here we are, you know, right in the middle of Moona, which is pretty much in the center of Hobart, and we can, you know, we can sort of occupy this space. We can turn up every Sunday and we can hear a nice message, or a convicting message, or a boring message, whatever it is. You know, you can hear all that, and we can sing some worship, whatever. And we can occupy the space, we can pay the rent, pay the rates and the things, we own it, and you know, do all that stuff, but we're still just occupying. Do we, together, want to be part of determining future and destiny in our city and beyond? Do we want to not just inhabit this space? Do you want to not just inhabit your street? Do you not want just inhabit your workplace? But do we want to own what we've been given? Because Jesus said, all authority on heaven and earth has been given to you to make a kingdom difference wherever I've called you to be. And I think we've got to decide that we are not just going to be an occupying force. You know, we've seen how complicated that became 2 times in Iraq. Because you know what? They went to occupy without a vision of what it could be. You know, we've got a kingdom vision. We can understand what God's calling us to do, and I think it is time for all of us to choose from taking up space, and I'm not saying you are. You guys are amazing. But you know what? I'm just lifting the bar. I'm saying let's go to the next place. Let's get before God. Let's get that kingdom vision, that anointing. Let's understand that we've been given authority. Let's decide that we're not just going to occupy. Hey, you know, some of you might think, oh yeah, I've got 20 years left in my life, or 10 or 15 or 50 or whatever it is. God is not finished with you. You are not here just to take up space. He has given you all authority. Let's choose to step into ownership. Let's choose to own what we've been given. Let's choose to own our stuff. You know what? Some of us have been battling with things. If we would just say, Lord, I want to own my stuff. I want to own that insecurity that causes me to have relationship breakdowns. I'm not going to live as a victim anymore. I'm going to own it, and I want you to come, and I want you to help me, and I choose to get the help that I need, and I am going to own this stuff, and I'm going to work through it. You know, we could make such a difference. Problem is, we've got so many of us, when I'm saying the we, I'm not talking about anyone individually. I'm just saying stuff that pervades Christianity so much that we've taken a welfare mentality to kingdom. Kingdom is not welfare. We are the expenders of welfare. We have been given the capacity to give and reach out and make a difference and lift people up and empower them and give them a hope and a future. We are not chosen. We're not recipients of welfare. You might say, well, Jesus died and he gave it to us for nothing. That's welfare. Well, in one sense it is, but no, it's not. It's inheritance. There is a difference between welfare and inheritance. And we've got to choose to step into inheritance rather than just taking the little bits that are left over. Come on, let's get full victory.